And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 88. Going to finish off our 2023 positional reviews with the relief pitcher position. Some make all the closers, but we'll call relief pitchers because they all count the same to us in a roundabout weird way. You can find me on Twitter at BDEntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. And to help me, as usual, on these wonderful shows, you can find them on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are you doing, my friend?
Pretty good. Sitting around waiting for something to happen at these winter meetings. Like LIV Golf has been more the LIV Golf hot stove. Not to flip sports here, but we were texting before, like there was a trade in LIV Golf and there's potentially John Rahm. That has been a hotter stove than MLB so far. I know MLB had a trade tonight, but just waiting for that Ohtani shoe to drop. Hopefully during the show. We were just talking before, like I'm waiting for a passing notification to come up, but not yet. It's been pretty slow so far.
Yep, slow go. Let's top it off. We have relievers today, so that'll be fun. We're in round six of our DC. We started like 2 weeks ago, so that's going strong.
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm being sarcastic, of course. You know me, sarcasm. But yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll recap some of that in a future episode, of course. But we're going to get you in. We're going to get you out. We're going to talk some relief pitchers. Unless you have any thoughts on Alex Verdugo and the Yankees and Red Sox making a trade where like that almost broke some curse of baseball, I'd imagine, somewhere.
Yeah, that was always weird to see them trade. We've talked during the season a lot about the backup behind the guy who gets moved. I think like Jaron Duran, Sidon Rafaela, those two guys, I think. It's just one less obstacle to regular playing time. I think that's probably, I feel like the most coverage will be like Verdugo going to the short porch, which given how he hits. Exactly. I think Yankee Stadium will help, but like it's maybe a few more home runs given the low fly ball rate that Verdugo has and not as many hits, honestly. Park factors, we think homers. Not sure if that's going to work that well in right field for hits. But yeah, I think Rafael and Jaron Duran move up a little bit in playing time projections as a result of this.
Yep, that's what Eric Cross tweeted out because he's very excited about Rafaela. He was gushing over him on my recent show with them. And we talked about Sedan a lot towards the end of last year as a kind of power speed dude that got called up. So if he can get every day at bats, that could be pretty nice. He's pretty darn cheap in drafts right now. I know that much. So he could be a fun one. Jaron Duran had his moments of being very good as well. So, yeah, getting Verdugo out of the way, there's rumors already that Verdugo, the Yankees are trying to get him to put him in a package to go get Juan Soto. So we'll see how long Verdugo is a Yankee. But, I wouldn't get overly excited about Alex Verdugo in Yankee Stadium. Let's just put it that way. But you never know. I like the Rafaela call for sure.
It's funny. I just pulled up baseball. You can just Google Baseball Savant Park Factors. Yankee Stadium for left-handed hitters is the worst baseball stadium for hits.
Yep.
Worst. That I didn't realize it was. It's actually second worst behind. They've got something called Muncie Bank Ballpark. I don't know what the hell that is.
No idea where that's at. Unless Oakland changed their name, which makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. But anyway, yeah, the worst. And the Red Sox are, where's Fenway at?
With that gap in right center, that'd be pretty nice. Yeah, it's gonna be pretty nice out there. It's a spacious right field in Fenway.
From worst to best, from best to worst.
That's
very interesting.
Lord Zola tweeted out that he mentioned the park factor thing. He updated his projections for Verdugo. He had Verdugo, I think, getting three more home runs, but losing 24 points of batting average.
There we go. Yeah, the Lord has spoken. It's good to be on the Lord's side.
It is great to be on the Lord's side. And we'll leave it at that.
Anyways.
All right. Let's talk relievers, relief pitching. Do you have something else you'd like to say?
No, just off my game tonight. That was bad.
Yeah. Relief pitching. This was a weird year because every single year we're always like, okay, you know, so many guys are going to lose their jobs. So many guys are going to get injured. You don't have to pay for closers, all these things. Well, this last year, it's been well documented, and we're obviously going to cover it on tonight's show, that if you drafted a closer, majority of them finished the year just fine, some much better than we anticipated. We were joking before the show. I took Alexis Diaz in round five of our DC. And that's after a year where I basically poo-pooed him all over draft boards and said I will not touch him in a draft. And he turned out to be darn good. So Camilo Duvall was an amazing closer. And he got there's a lot of you the all-in or all-out on Duvall last season. So when you're looking at this wonderful Bloom board, Ryan, what are your takeaways from this? Because it's pretty, pretty nice overall, I would say.
And like it is, it definitely is. And in last year, I mean, I think it was like before the 2022 season when reliever prices really started to get out of control. And then entering 2023, the prices for closers with elite skills with the job, like we're just through the roof. You had to pay pretty much a first four round price tag in 15 team leagues, maybe first five round in 12 teamers. And that's going to, but because of what we're seeing on the board here, which I just pulled up for the YouTube and live stream crowd and tweeted out earlier today, but because of what we're seeing here, because of the success, Bubba, that you mentioned of almost everybody early in the closer pool and then a few nice hits late, it's going to be the same damn thing in 2024. We're already seeing it in this DC where we both took our closer, I feel like late in the fourth round. It's going to be the same thing because I think a lot of closers hit and it's still that combination of yes, a lot of closers hit, but also there are still there's definitely a subset of MLB teams that go to a regular closer and said closer has really good skills. That's still maybe 10, maybe 12 guys entering 2024. So I think this recent trend of if you want to get your quote unquote ace closer, you've got to spend in the first like 50, 60 picks.
Yep, that's the gist of it. And that's why, like I said, I took Alexis Diaz when I took him. I know you took a closer also early on. There's to kind of have one and then you could speculate later on and still be okay in the saves market. You do see ratios change quite a bit, which would probably reflect in other stats as well. But if you want those just elite guys with awesome ratios, you know, 30 plus saves, you get them early and you're good to go. Now the question always is, well, should I draft too early? What should I do? That's a whole other philosophical question you can have. But that'll be the interesting thing this draft season. And a lot of the kind of second, the next in line guys, how aggressive are we on them this year, considering there wasn't a ton of change type situation. And that'll be fun to see how that kind of plays out as the draft season goes on, because it'll change a ton. Like, you know, we're going to talk Emmanuel Clase out the gate. Well, they just traded for Scott Barlow, who's expensive. And now they're talking about shopping Emmanuel Clase in Cleveland. So Barlow might be more of a closer than we think at some point this year. Then again, you never know. So let's go to Emmanuel Clase. He had an ADP of 28. That was the end of the second round in 15s last year. He finished eighth at the position, though, with a 3.22 ERA. A 1.16 whip. He did get 44 saves, which is very good.
Yes.
But he did that in 75 games. It was not the dominant Clase. The strikeout numbers are down. I know this because I had a couple nice shares of Clase where you appreciated the saves, but you looked at closers that went around him, and the overall production was lacking in a bit, I should say. So what's your thoughts on Clase, who saw that velo drop a ton and it kind of correlated everywhere else?
12 blown saves. To your point, like this could have been
drastic,
a pretty legendary season. Like it could have been 50 to 55 if this was from a skill standpoint the Class A that we saw in 2021 and 2022. On the flip side, it also kind of could have been, you know, maybe we got lucky with Class A and the leash that the Guardians had on him to be able to get those 44 saves. With, I mean, the surface stats were fine, like 3.22 ERA, no one's going to complain about that. 3.40 Sierra is pretty much right in line, but this was far from the vintage Class A. A strikeout rate to go from 28 down to 21% is really brutal. But yeah, had Class A in labor last year, and it was just, I will say, like I paired him with Carlos Estevez, who I'm sure we'll talk about later, but just the ability to set and forget two closers in a league is just such a, not only from like a mental standpoint of trying to find and worry about saves all the time, but like I don't think I spent a single dollar on fab in closers, and it just opened up so many more options for me elsewhere. So I still think Class A is one of the top closers in baseball. Wherever he does get traded, like he'll still be a closer. I would think there's a very good chance of that happening. And really, the skills, while they were not vintage, they could still bounce back to that, and they were still pretty good for a quote-unquote down year.
Some may say he's still ahead of the Class A, so that is good for Emmanuel. And don't be a hater, because Josh Hader was the second reliever off the board and finished 10th at the position with a 1.28 ERA, a 1.1 whip, and 33 saves. And like we talk about Class A's kind of roller coaster season, that was a lot the same with Hader at times, you know. And one thing with Class A, you mentioned all the outings. He threw over 70 innings again. This is the third straight year with less than 60 innings for Hader, something to maybe think about. He's very effective when he throws his innings. The ratios are very, very good. The strikeouts are very good as well. But there were points last year where they said, we can't use him on X amount of days in a row. Like, there's very, like, kind of rules in play in San Diego about Hader's, especially as the season went on, about his usage. So it might be curtailed an even bigger season. Who knows? But still a quality season, a good season. But again, you took, you know, Class A and Hader up here, and they finished 8th and 10th at the position, and it kind of makes you go, that's no fun, but still pretty good.
Yeah, still fine. And like I said, when I took Class A in labor, like, I don't regret that pick at all, even though he finished 8th. Like, if you take an early closer and they finish in the top 10, like, that means you got your saves, and that's really what you're going for with these picks. So, yeah, Hader, like, obviously landing spot will be dependent, but like, the whiffs are still elite, the K rate's still elite, everything's there. I hesitate a little bit to like dive in too much to these skills, really, of any reliever, just because it's so from year to year, there's so much variance, especially once we get outside of these top guys compared to like starting pitchers. But I mean, Hader, for K rate the last 3 years for Hader, 46, 37, 37%. Like, this guy has been elite for a long time. And no matter where he goes, I think he will continue to be.
I'm curious to see where he lands, because it feels like San Diego's moving on. They've kind of had that.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he came back to San Diego.
So I am curious where he lands. I haven't really done a deep dive on like who needs closers per se, but that would be an interesting situation there. Like, because even the Rangers, they got Leclerc there. They brought back Chapman. They just picked up Yates, so they're not in the market. Who goes out? Like, what contender basically goes out and makes the move is the question. Yeah. Maybe the Cubs. The Cubs could use them. They have a – I like Alzolay and all, but Hader would be an upgrade.
Orioles good. Yenny or Cano is
– Orioles is a great one, actually.
At the end. But
Orioles is a – that's a really good call on the Orioles. I like that a lot. Like, especially if Hader would be like a one-year deal, because Bautista coming back. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe the hot stove will ring with that sometime during the show here. Jordan Romano, third reliever off the board, finished 9th at the position with a 2.9 ERA, 1.22 whip, 36 saves, which is still a very quality season. Strikeouts were pretty much in line with previous years. So he had his ups and downs like most of these closers, but in the end still finished very, very strong. Like you said already, you wouldn't regret drafting Jordan Romano.
Oh, would have no regrets drafting him again next year, really. I mean, the saves, it's had 36 saves each of the last two seasons. Skills again are fine. Actually had a quite a bit of an uptick in missed bats. The swinging strike went from 14 up to 17%. Control on the surface, control looks a little shaky, but he throws strikes, 35% ball rate. Again, ball rate is what I use to kind of validate underlying walk rates, and that was better than average. So Jordan Romano, another fine year. Like a 1.22 whip for him is a little high, but again, like, so much can change with these ratios in a couple bad outings, especially over a 60 inning sample, that I don't look too much at the surface stats and the results here. It's more just did the percentages, did the per plate appearance stuff look good, the whiffs look good, and were the saves there, and was the job there for him? And Romano, it was there for everything.
Most definitely. You know what really looked good? Devin Williams, the fourth closer off the board, finished second at the position.
Look at that smile on your face. I know where this is going.
I'm not going to press you on it, but with a 1.53 ERA and a 0.92 whip, 36 saves. You talked about like Hader strikeout numbers pretty much in line with the percentages. He walks guys, but that's a lot of these elite, like, hard throwing closers will do. But I love Williams. I always have. He's the top closer off the board right now in DCs this year. I have zero problem with that at all. We said this last year, even with these guys, you can mix and match pretty much the top X amount of guys here, and you can't really go wrong. I love Devin Williams. The only caveat I'll say for 2024, may get traded at some time because that's the Brewers, but I love Devin Williams. I love what he did last year, and he paid off in a big, big way.
Yep, and again, if traded, he's the best reliever in the game. Now, when we saw non-Felix Bautista injury division, Devin Williams, I think, should be the top closer off the board. So I will take my L on Williams and the next guy we're about to talk about because that was our little side bet.
Yep. Yes, it was. Year. And that next player is Ryan Pressly, who still had a good year. Fifth closer off the board, finished 13th. The 3.58 ERA, a little less than ideal, but a 107 whip, 31 saves. He ended up pitching in 65 games, which is pretty good. That was up from the 50 last season. Overall, pretty solid. Did see some of the skills recess a little bit. But when you're playing on an elite team like the Astros, saves will be there in punches.
Yep. Back-to-back 30-plus save seasons for Ryan Pressly. The narrative, I think, was that Pressly was a lot worse than what we thought. Because remember, he had that like terrible start to the season. I think it was opening day where he blew a save and I think took the loss and then like didn't pitch. Like the usage was really weird early on for Ryan Pressly. Like he would not pitch back-to-back days, but there were also times where he was coming off an off day in a save situation and Houston would go with someone else. So like there was a lot of chatter, especially in April around Pressly, and it really wasn't looking good then. But that all kind of settled down as the season went on and put together another fine year. There is, I think, like, I mean, there's some kind of, I mean, he will be 35, Pressly will, next year. He's had kind of neck injuries, minor injuries here and there. Like, I do wonder when this starts to fade a little bit for Ryan Pressly, and I think that's why his ADP has dropped a little bit compared to last year. Yeah, he's number 85, his ADP 85 right now, which is probably early top 10 closers, something like that.
Probably.
But no, he's safe. Another fine year. 3.58 ERA is tough, but still got you some Ks. Great whip. And again, you draft him for saves. You got 31 saves.
Yeah, they'll win another 100 games probably, or 90 plus, and he'll get his, and Brian Abreu will get his right behind him, and there'll be one happy family in Houston.
Yeah, we think. We don't know. No more Dusty, so.
Yeah, true. Very true. So they might win more. Raisel Iglesias, sixth closer out the board, finished 11th. He's just one of those steady Eddie guys that kind of, if you list off the closers, kind of gets lost in the mix because it was a quiet 33 saves, 2.75 ERA, 1.19 whip. The Braves obviously were amazing. But you just go through Iglesias' seasons. It's just, 33 saves, 17 last year because of the trade. He was going to get him 34, 34, 30, 28. The ratios are usually in the twos. Like, the dude is just steady Eddie out there. Getting older for sure, but still, as long as he's on Atlanta, I got no qualms about Raisel Iglesias.
Exactly. Agreed. Would take him ahead of who we just talked about with Ryan Pressly. Yep. I just don't really see any like issue at all in the skills. But you mentioned Atlanta, team context. If there's one position where team context matters the most, it's with the closers because the role is everything. And Iglesias is locked in on a team that should win over 100 yet again.
Yeah, it's one of those each year that I always look at some of these closers, and it's better this year. I was like, why is Jordan Romano going so far ahead of Iglesias last year? This year, Iglesias is 5 picks ahead of Romano. And that seems – they seem at least even to me, kind of. So there shouldn't be the gap per se, and that sounds better because there was almost a 25-pick gap last year. Yep. Ryan Helsley, seventh off the board, finished 41st in the position, 2.45 ERA, 106 whip, 14 saves. Obviously, a lot of injured days throughout the season. Made 33 appearances, but I will say finished insanely strong. When he came off the IL, I did not think he'd be the dude. I thought Gallego still earned it, or they had some other options. Now, Helsley jumped back in there, and I remember doing first pitch at one point. I was like, three nights in a row, Helsley had saves. Like, they were just going with him. So that was a very strong finish if you want to think going forward. So kind of a lost season, the first one in this top group, but at the same time, a nice finish for optimism, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just like taking the bigger picture here, this is the first like L. disappointment, and it really wasn't for, I mean, you covered it well. It wasn't for like a miss on skills or anything like that and get booted from the role. This was all injury. Seven saves after September 1st when Helsley came back. That speaks to what you were just talking about, finishing strong. The only reason this was a bust was because of just injuries, and sometimes that happens. But so far, before Helsley, each of the top six finished in the top 13, with Iglesias and Presley finishing 11th and 13th, respectively. And the guy talk about next finished number one. But like, this kind of goes to show, like, the early closer picks as a whole, if you went that route, you got your saves. Helsley's the only one out of the top 11 to not get 29 saves. He only got 14.
Yeah, that next gentleman you mentioned, Felix Bautista, eighth off the board, finished number one, 1.48 ERA, 0.92 WHIP, 33 saves. He threw 61 innings. I don't know if you've already looked, Ryan, but do you know how many strikeouts he had?
Just going to pull it up. He had a lot.
110 in 61 innings pitched. That's almost two per inning. Like, he was in, and honestly, I have to like really break it down, but he was hurt. He obviously finished the season needing Tommy John. I wonder how long he started pitching towards the end with that, you know, impingement to really, because he wasn't quote unquote as dominant, but still the season was great. Like, an amazing season, unfortunately ended with the big no-no.
Yep. Eight wins too. Eight wins. Yep. I mean, eight wins and triple digit strikeouts. Like, there's a lot of starters that don't have both of those. So yeah, it just sucks that he's gone. Hopefully he's still with us, but
gone but not forgotten.
not an Eloy.
Are they hanging his jersey up in the dugouts?
Not quite an Eloy level downer, but yeah, hope to see him back and ready to go in 2025. But yeah, that would make sense with the hater thing. Like, it would make a ton of sense for Baltimore to sign Josh for a 1-year deal.
Be a great spot here. And here's another kind of oopsie. That's Kenley Jansen, ninth off the board, finished 29th, 3.63 ERA, 1.28 WHIP, 29 saves. The ratios are pretty much what did it, because otherwise this is a lot of what we usually see from Kenley Jansen. A lot less, 14 less appearances than last year, so the appearances dropped down as well, but still pretty good stuff. This K rate, 27.7%, not the best of his career, but still not like deadly. So I think age is finally catching up with Kenley Jansen.
It's funny looking back, or it's interesting looking back when we talked about just kind of time traveling back to March or April with the pitch clock. Like, Kenley Jansen was the poster boy for pace and taking so long, and the thought was that the pitch clock would really hinder him. I don't know how much of this was pitch clock or what. I mean, it was only 52 innings. He did, like, I mean, the season basically ended in September. I think he had a pretty rough bout with COVID. And
I think you're right. Yeah.
He has had, I know he had those heart issues that were pretty serious when he was on LA. So I don't know, like, at the end of the year, kind of what happened. I think he just kind of shut it down. Still feel like the skills are good enough. I mean, almost a 30% strikeout rate, plenty of missed bats, those plenty of strikes. The velocity was actually up 2 miles an hour, which is really surprising for Kenley Jansen with the pitch clock in tote. So, like, I think if Jansen has a gig, he could be effective at a pretty cheap price. But that is for 2024 talk. But really, I don't think the skills fell off all that much.
No, he's one of my favorite guys to always kind of take a chance on late if I missed like a reliever too, because I'm with you on that respect. It's, if anything, it's the ratios are kind of dwindling because his ability to walk guys and then get out of the jam right away have kind of fallen to the side. So yeah. That's the issue. Otherwise, he's still, like you said, the skills are still not like completely gone, and that's what makes him intriguing, to say the least. Camilo Duvall, 10th reliever off the board, finished 4th at the position, 2.93 ERA, 1.14 WHIP, 39 strikeouts. It was a joy to watch last year because in 2022, I watched him a lot, and the numbers were great, but it was scary is the best way I could say it. You know, 1.24 WHIP in 2022. He dropped it to 1.14, and I know it doesn't sound like much, but in the sample size for a pitcher with doing what he was doing, that was a lot for watching what I was watching. Like, it made a big difference in the overall production for Camilo Duvall, and if he can continue that, he's going to be one of the best closers in baseball for a while. I just have a lot of if he can continue doing that, but a great 2023.
Yeah. Do you worry about the control at all?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm hinting at there. If he can continue to do it, like he was better, but he still nearly had a 10% walk rate. But it was better this year, and it translated to more strikeouts, so on and so forth. But there were games I'd watch, and he would be flirting with things. It wasn't like Brian Wilson-esque back in the day, where they literally patented torture for the Giants to sell merchandise to torture on it.
The beard.
It wasn't that bad, but there were moments where I'm like, oh, don't do this again, buddy. Don't do this again. So, yeah.
It was nice that San Francisco actually stuck with Duvall.
That was nice too, yes.
Because that was really the big thing entering the season. But, yeah, I mean, two back-to-back sub-3 ERAs, 39 saves. Like, he's durable, 68 innings each of the last two seasons. Do worry a little bit about the walk rate, but, like, everything else, 50% ground ball rate, 15% swinging strike, like everything's there for Duvall to keep this going, man. And he'll be what, 26 next year? Like, got that going for him too.
He's a youngin. He's definitely a youngin. So no problem with him at all. The next guy I feel bad for because he's just not getting paid, unfortunately, and that's David Bednar. 11.
And he's stuck in Pittsburgh. No offense to Pittsburgh, but the team.
That's what makes it more impressive. He's doing what he's doing because he finished fifth of the position, ERA of 2. A 1-1 ERA and 39 saves. He's not a free agent until 2027. He's making $750,000 this year. And he's one of the best closers in baseball. You just look at his numbers. They continue to be outstanding in the back end of that bullpen. I think that's why it's so hard to trade him each year because of all the years he has left. And Pirates are like, hey, pay up, boys. So that makes me – like, I think in the past we were in drafts thinking, okay, are we drafting him? He's going to get traded. He's going to be a setup man. I almost think you have to draft him and go, okay, he's going to be a closer all year unless something crazy happens because he's this darn good. So he did it once again. An amazing season from David Bednar.
Actually from Pittsburgh. So maybe he just likes it there.
he's a Yenzer.
He's a Yenzer. Probably throwing back some Yinglings right now.
Yes, sir.
I was worried about with Bednar, I wasn't worried about even like a trade. Wasn't worried about him losing the role. I was worried about his back. Bednar missed considerable time in 2022 with lower back issues, like multiple. And that was just enough for me to, he threw 52 innings in 2022, but he spent 54 days on the IL with those back injuries. So that was really the only thing when I looked at Bednar entering the season. Plus, I mean, I guess Pittsburgh not winning. Here I continue to just destroy Pittsburgh. I've actually been there. Pretty sweet.
Man. Maybe our next live show should be live from Pittsburgh.
I used to live in Akron, Ohio. Would fly
and, you're crapping on Pittsburgh?
Oh, and I mean, and Pittsburgh was like, Pittsburgh was awesome. Pittsburgh was awesome compared to Akron. A lot of things are awesome compared to...
That sound you hear, folk, is backpedaling.
Akron. Bednar, yeah, like I don't know, the back injuries could still come up, but they didn't last year, and so without the injury risk, like this dude is a freaking beast,
and he's getting acknowledged more in drafts now. He's got a respectable ADP, like he's not outside the top 100 like last year. He's 65, which is definitely in range, like the fifth reliever out the board, give or take. He's going right behind Iglesias, right before Romano. So
I actually passed on Bednar, talking about our DC here. Actually, so it's interesting that the fourth round, in our draft, but was Emmanuel Clase, then Duvall, then I took Yoan Duran, who we'll talk about, then Iglesias, you took Alexis Diaz, and then Bednar, last out of that group.
Closers run round 4. That was fun stuff. A guy that's dropping in drafts so far this season, and we'll see how it continues to go, is Clay Holmes. He went one pick after Bednar in 2023, but he finished 21st of the position. Big difference. 2.86 ERA, 1.17 WHIP, 24 saves. There's times he was hurt. There's times when would he get back into the closing duties. There was a lot surrounding Clay Holmes throughout the season. In the end, the stat line was pretty darn solid outside of the amount of saves you were hoping to get, but still he was technically the guy, but there were other guys getting chances by the end of the season. So good season, but you hoped for more.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. I agree, which is just weird to say after a 286 ERA. Like, the results were kind of there for Clay Holmes. But it's interesting. Only has 44 saves over the last two seasons when he's, I guess, primarily been the closer. So I don't know how much Aaron Boone trusts him. I don't know. There just seems to be a very short leash with Clay Holmes. There also seems to be a lot of like really high ups and a lot of really bad downs with Clay Holmes. Like the consistency is not there, and you string together a few of those rough outings. Yeah, like in June, Clay Holmes had a 1 ERA. In July, he had a 108 ERA. August, he had a 784 ERA. And then September, a 0.75 ERA. Like, I may not roster Clay Holmes for that reason next year.
The volatility scares you away?
Scares, but not good for the health.
No, trust me. I understand that completely. Let's talk about the next guy, though, because you said you just took him in drafts. And Johan Duran, 13th off the board, finished 14th at the position, 2.45 ERA, 1.14 with 27 strikeouts. And in one word, the best way I can describe him, filthy. So what's your thoughts on Johan Duran?
That's why I took him, man. It's filth.
Yeah, you better clear your browser then.
It's filth. The only thing is, like, is he the guy in Minnesota? I mean, he had 27 saves. No one else in Minnesota had five. So, like, yes, he is the guy, but there are some times where he doesn't pitch the ninth. That was my only reservation taking Duran in the fourth round. But, like, everything else here, man, the strikeouts will be there. The ground ball rate, I talk about ground ball rate a lot. Once it gets into, like, that 60% status, I don't want to say impossible. It's extremely hard to post a bad ERA when you have the strikeouts that Duran has and a 66% ground ball rate. It's just like strikeout, ground ball, ground ball. Like that sequence of events in baseball often does not turn into runs. And no, so it's
very, very difficult.
I just think like I'm a little bit going on a limb that he gets over like 30 saves with Minnesota, but I think he's good enough to do it. And even if he doesn't, like the ratios of Ks will be really, really good. So a fine year, even though Duran only finished 14th, I'm guessing that's because he only had 27 saves and not 35 or whatever, but I don't know. Yep.
The next two guys we can kind of speed through. Daniel Bard was who we thought he was, injuries and more. And then Scott Barlow was getting saves and Kansas City got traded to the Padres. That kind of ended that charade, but anything on those two? Cause I don't have much.
No, just for the 10th time, apologies, DVR, Derek Van Riper, for taking Barlow over Bednar in our XFL draft last year. They went for the same price.
Oof. Yeah, it's all good. All good. Alexis Diaz, here we go to the 16 through 30 range. Diaz finished third at the position, ADP of 128. That's big boy stuff. 3.07 ERA, 1.19 whip, 37 saves. He had a nice strikeout rate. The walks were an issue once again, but overall, outstanding. Like you said earlier, they stuck with him the whole season, which was a plus. So anything on Alexis Diaz?
The only thing I'll add is dude kind of fell apart at the end of the year. And I don't know why. It could just be random variance, a tough spell. He was used heavily. Like, so it's kind of funny to like the
71 the games. Wow.
Yeah, 71 games. And I think, well, yeah, 37 innings in the first half. He was used often. And it was just interesting that was the ultimate, not downfall of Alexis Diaz, but that's kind of why he struggled at the end is that usage. When coming into the season, that was kind of usage was the reason not to take him, because we weren't sure if Cincinnati was going to actually anoint him the role. What that means for next year, like, I don't know. I wouldn't read too much into the late collapse. I mean, you obviously didn't take him in the fourth round of our draft. I think he'll get plenty of opportunities in Cincinnati. And so it's fine. I just, that's the one little like hesitation I have is the late fade for Diaz, but I think it was more workload than anything. And he still he'll be 27 next year, so should be fine.
The age, I'm pretty pumped on. It is always Great American. If he gets into walks, you have more high likelihood of getting into trouble there, but we'll see. I think he's got enough strikeout stuff in him to maybe grow and develop more from the season, so we shall see. Andres Munoz, 17th off the board, finished 38th, 294 ERA, 127 WHIP, 13 saves, a lot of time on the IL. And then when Paul Sewald finally got traded, he kind of took over closing duties for the most part, but still not the most ideal season. That WHIP was a killer if you took him, but what's your thoughts on Andres Munoz?
I mean, I never understood why Munoz was going this high to begin with. Remember? Because, I mean, it was Sewald. It was never Munoz.
Yep.
It was never Munoz. It was only Munoz.
People were wish casting.
There was, yes, it was like the Nick Anderson of like 2020 or 2021, whenever that was, when Nick Anderson was like a top 10 round pick and wasn't the closer. So all those, I think all of those 13 saves came after, no, all but one came after the Sewald trade. So, Munoz is the guy now, at least till he gets traded. You never know what Trader Jerry's going to do or what, I mean, Seattle's doing this offseason. I have no idea.
It's a weird build they have going on there.
But Munoz for himself, I'm not worried like about the ratios. I mean, he had sub 3 ERA. It was just the WHIP.
WHIP's the killer. He should start the year as a closer, but I've already tweeted it out. I have Matt Brash being the guy by the end of the season. So
Brash is he's becoming a pretty popular plan B.
Kind of bummed out about that because I tweeted that out like it feels like a month ago now, and it's carrying on. It's not because of me that's carrying on. They clarify that, but when I see people catching on to that, not as fun. Not as fun this time of year. Like in June, awesome. But not right now.
300 ADP for Matt Brash. Let's see which one of us blinks first and takes him in our BC.
Yeah, probably neither one of us. Someone else will jump him like 270 because they're listening to the show. Don't get me started on that boy. Paul Sewald, 19th off the board, finished 12th at the position. Or no, Pete Fairbanks, sorry. Let me give the Rays their proper due. 18th off the board, 23rd at the position, 2.58 ERA, 101 WHIP, outstanding ratios. 25 saves, did spend some time on the IL, but still 49 games most of his career, 45 innings pitched most of his career. And when healthy, he was the dude in Tampa Bay. So that was pretty good to see as well.
Yeah, and I'm trying to pull up the Rays, like, save shares. It was Fairbanks 25 and Jason Adam 12. Nobody else on the Rays had more than two saves or more than one save last year. So, like, this notion that the Rays mix and match is pretty much not a thing. Maybe some years it is, some years it isn't. But the last couple years it hasn't been. And that's what we get with Fairbanks. The strikeout rate was elite. I think that drops off a little bit because the whiffs were just okay. But I'm kind of nitpicking. Fairbanks is totally fine as a closer. Ray should win plenty of games. And it's kind of watch the usage and the roles entering spring. But the Rays have shown that they can stick to one, maybe two guys, and that's it.
Yeah, and I'll steal this from Collette. I'll give Jason Collette all the credit. And if you want to listen to a lot of his work, but especially the First Pitch podcast with Sleeper on the Bust, he goes on to talk about it, and I know I've heard it elsewhere with him, is they start discussing Fairbanks, and they discuss the, there's so many saves in Tampa Bay thing. So what you mentioned, two guys got the saves. What I really liked is Mr. Ray himself, Collette, goes, if you look at it, and you hinted at it when you said that even the year before, Fairbanks was pretty much the guy. So for two straight seasons, when the closers are healthy, Cash has stayed with primarily one guy. They've had so many injuries there that it's tough to stay with one guy. So he was trying to nail that home. The part I found hilarious is Justin Mason's arguing with Mr. Ray about the Ray's philosophy on things. And I'm sitting there listening to that going, maybe you let the guy that literally watches every second of a Rays game get to have this one real quick. But it was good. So I recommend you guys check that out. really good insight from Jason Klett, as always.
For ages 18 and over.
Yes, normally, there is a discretion.
We do have to do the disclaimer there. Electric show at first pitch.
Listener discretion is advised.
Absolutely. Klett's been on our show 2 years in a row. It's like basically we talk about a Ray. It's like,
and Klett's in the back of the room.
Come up here.
Hey, come to the mic real quick. He's a good dude. One of the good ones out there.
Yep.
Paul Sewald, the 19th closer off the board, finished 12th at the position. Amazing season between Seattle and Arizona. 3.12 ERA, 1.15 WHIP, 34 saves. Like, I guess you could want the ratios to be a little, like, at least the ERA to be a little better. Overall, great season. Strikeouts were outstanding. Like you said earlier, I didn't understand the Munoz deal because Sewald was the dude, and he proved it in a big way.
And he'll be the dude in Arizona again next year. Like he was the dude. Kevin Ginkle was booted from his partial stay in the closer role when Sewald came over. So like I feel like Sewald's one of those guys. If you wait on closer and you still want to get someone with good skills and who has the job, he like might be one of the last ones available. I say that not really knowing
84 ADP this year. He's going ahead of Ryan Pressly.
Yeah, him and Pressly 84, 85. Like that's a nice
little pocket, if you
will. That's a nice little place to get your closer because next is Munoz.
Yeah, then Helsley.
92, and then Helsley. So, like, it starts to...
Then Fairbanks drops a lot.
Yeah, then Fairbanks, and then...
Yeah, then it gets real murky after that.
And it's... All right, well, your boy Alzale. You might have the min on.
I might. I very, very well might have the min on Edward Alzale, and you're cool with that.
You're Braxton Garrett of 2023.
I'll take my chances. I'll go to battle with Edward. Jose Leclerc, this one might have shocked people because A, I didn't understand him being the 20th off the board at 179, but he finished 81st the position. And I say it's like a tale of two seasons. 2.68 ERA, 1.14 WHIP, 4 saves. But he finished the year as the main man in Texas, even into the postseason. And I think that's going to kind of skew the opinions coming into 2024. So the reason he's 81st is because he had 4 saves. But overall, I think he had a rather good season for Jose Leclerc standards. Could be wrong. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, a 2.68 ERA, a 1.14 WHIP. Like, is that right? I'm now questioning my own freaking thing when it says Jose Leclerc was good. He had a good season, and like you mentioned, Bubba, like the finish was immaculate. Jose Leclerc in the second half, according to HQ, I don't know when they. The exact date for the cutoff. I think it's a little bit different than Fangraphs, but a 2.16 ERA, a 0.99 WHIP for Jose Leclerc with, yes, the walks were still there, but cut down on the walks from first to second half from 15% down to 10. Strikeouts went up, whiffs went up, velocity went up, and he did have the gig like in September, and he, I think, even got a postseason save or two with Texas. So, kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's my bias against Jose Leclerc. I think of him and just kind of cast him off because he's failed in the role before and sometimes just cannot hit water from the boat, but was pretty good last year. And as it stands with Texas has the gig, Texas is someone who could go for like a Josh Hader. They've shown the propensity to spend.
Well, like Spores got a ton of usage just last year. They just went and got Kirby Yates. I thought they re-signed Chapman, but he's not on the list. I know they were talking about bringing him back too. So it's going to be interesting in the back of that Texas bullpen. A lot more to dissect in the coming weeks ahead. Kyle Finnegan, 21st, closer off the board, finished 17th. The ratio's not great. 3.76 ERA, 1.3 WHIP, but he did get you 28 saves. Injury-riddled season, but when he was healthy, they put him in the back end of that bullpen, and he at least got the saves if he needed them. But and as you're going to find out as this goes on farther, ratios are pretty much up in the air. So you're pretty much going for saves and strikeouts at this point in time. And Finnegan gave you that.
Finnegan had a weird year where, he had 11 saves through May and pretty much left the role. But then in the summer, he was nails. Mm-hmm. He was absolute nails. I think he had a sub-2 ERA from June through August with 14 saves. And that all kind of fell apart in September and October. But there was a stretch there where Kyle Finnegan, who was available in Fab because he was cut, given the slow start and injuries and that sort of thing.
And Hunter Harvey's came out of nowhere and started dealing.
Mm-hmm. But Finnegan came back, and the summer of Kyle Finnegan was actually
pretty good.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out in 2024. Next two guys I don't have a ton on, Jorge Lopez or Anthony Dominguez. Lopez, pretty much nothing. Dominguez had his moments in Philadelphia, but overall nothing. Do you have anything on those two?
No, Lopez, just like the poster boy for volatility of relievers. He was so good like 2 years ago. And,
yep. Ugh. Up in flames. Evan Phillips, though, the Los Angeles Dodgers, 24th closer off the board, 15th at the position with a 2.05 ERA, 0.83 whip, and 24 saves. Those are what they call elite ratios, folks. And he got a handful of saves. He did miss some time on the IL, but, you know, being on the Dodgers, maximized the rest of his time there. Pretty good, as they say.
Yeah, I wanted, so similar to the Rays discussion, looking up Dodgers closers from last year, it was Phillips with 7, and it was Gratterall with, sorry, Phillips with 24.
24.
Of course, it was Gratterall with 7.
Yep.
And then Caleb Ferguson, 3. Ryan Yarbrough somehow had 2 saves.
Dude, he was awesome. Don't get me started on him. He was
great. Your boy down the stretch, wasn't he?
Well, he was getting wins, saves, ratios were great. Like, he was one of those, if you didn't want to stream crappy pitchers, Yarbrough was your dude.
Bubba's hype for some Ryan Yarbrough.
They haven't drafted him yet.
It's just interesting looking back, and I know there were injuries and that sort of thing. We really had no idea this time last year who the Dodgers closer was going to be. And, I mean, Phillips more than filled the role there. And those ratios, yeah, like a 2.05 ERA, 0.83 whip, like that, you do that over 60 innings, I mean, that does actually have an impact on your staff. That the ratios were that good that there's some movement there in terms of value, which is probably why Phillips was 15th with only 24 saves. It's interesting to see Rasball's rankings here, where like Phillips and Duran were 14 and 15 with less than 30 saves, but great ratios.
Yep, they factored that in for sure. Alex Lang finished 16th in the position. Ratios sucked, 3.68 ERA, 1.33 whip, but the 26 saves, which left him in a good finishing spot. He was a guy that you drafted late. If you needed saves, you rostered him. Otherwise, you're just praying it didn't get bad.
Yeah, you hopefully never watched Alex Lang because it was infuriating. Like, there's the two sides of the coin. Alex Lang has, or at least entering 2023, some like crazy combination of strikeouts and ground balls that like no one else in baseball was able to do. But then he walks like one out of every 6 guys. So it doesn't help. No idea what will happen with him next year. But you got your 26 saves out of a 280 ADP. Like, you take that. You call that a win.
Yep, all day long. I got nothing on Dylan Floret. What about you?
Not a win.
Gotcha. Craig Kimbrell, free agent again this season. 27th off the board. Finished 7th at the position. Honestly, wouldn't be shocked if that happened again this year because he's going super late again because there's no home. But he's going to sign as a closer. He had a 3.26 ERA, a 1.04 whip, 23 saves. Third straight season with at least 20 saves for Kimbrell. So where you're drafting him, you're getting your money's worth. And the strikeouts bounced back this year. So nice stuff for Mr. Kimbrell. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, man. He had 94 strikeouts and 8 wins. 23 saves. Like, that's a season. That's an absolute season. And the skills, I mean, look pretty damn good. Some issues late. Walk rate wasn't that great. But, like, I agree, man. I think Kimbrell closes somewhere.
ADP's 234 right now. It's one of those
that's worth. Ask, Jesus.
Yep.
That's worth it.
Definitely one to look at. He's going right ahead of the next guy we're going to talk about, actually.
God, this guy.
This guy's name is Carlos Estevez, for those that are watching at home. 28th reliever off the board, finished 22nd, 3.90 ERA, 1.49 whip. Holy crap. And that's over 62 innings. Not good, Bob. But he did get you 31 saves. So, like, the dilemma, would you rather have had Alex Lang or Carlos Estevez? Probably Alex Lang, weirdly enough. Because Estevez, talk about not watching your pitcher pitch. Never watch Carlos Estevez pitch.
And I did.
The worst things.
And I did, man. Plenty. I mentioned earlier in the show that I had Estevez in Class A in labor and was like sweating that out in the second half. And Carlos Estevez, the last month of the season, had a 7.56 ERA, 1.92 whip. Dude was like a legend in the first half. He had 21 saves with a 1.85 ERA. And then he morph back into
college. I got out of control.
Yeah. Like, I have zero faith that he can do this again. Like, if imagine if the first half and second, it's all the relievers, it's all timing, luck, whatever. Imagine if his first half and second half were flipped. He'd be nowhere, anywhere on this sheet. So, like, yes, I'm happy I drafted Carlos Estevez at whatever I did in labor. But, like, would I do that again? God, I hope not.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I might have actually taken him in a draft already. So we'll see how that goes. When you get desperate for saves late in draft and hold formats, this is what happens.
Estevez is there for you.
Yep, he's your man looking you right in the face saying, draft me, draft me. And you're just like, I guess so. The last two on this list at 29 and 30, Giovanni Gallegos, 4.42 ERA, 1.20 WHIP, 10 saves. He had moments where he looked really good as the closer in St. Louis, and obviously based on the ratios, not great. Then you had Jason Adam. You mentioned the two closers basically in Tampa. He still finished 34th at the position because of the elite ratios and the 12 saves. He was very, very good. Like, very, very good stuff with Jason Adam. So any thoughts on Gallegos and Adam?
No, I mean, Gallegos, I mean, this conversation could be had over years. Like, he's just not going to be the guy in St. Louis. 10 saves is pretty good for him. But yeah, and then the skill started to falter a little bit. Jason Adam, you kind of nailed too, Bubba. Helpful, especially in spots, if you could time those saves right.
Yeah, he's one of those when you're speculating on relievers in draft and holds, Adam would have been a clutch one, like a tremendously clutch one, where there's other guys like, yeah, not bad. He would have been money to have on your roster, obviously. A couple players outside of the top 30 before we recap the whole cha-cha here. Tanner Scott finished sixth at the position with an ADP of 554. Rob McCabe and his FAB reports said on 12-team OCs, the one player that was added on most teams that finished, I think, in the top 20 or something at the position, Tanner Scott was that guy. He has basically had the most impact off the waiver wire because we discussed most of these guys that got drafted were the closers. Well, Scott was not because he had AJ Puck and Floro involved. So Scott was one of the guys you could add with his 12 saves on the season. So what's your thoughts on Tanner Scott, who had a sub-1 WHIP as well?
I'm not surprised to hear that factoid from Rob, because Tanner Scott, and this for me, this was the biggest takeaway of the reliever position in 2023. Tanner Scott was the only top 15 closer to be drafted or basically be undrafted. Everyone else was pretty much drafted as a closer in the top 30. Tanner Scott's like the only one who was basically available in FAB who finished top 15 at the position. And so, like, I don't know if every year that's going to hold or whatever, but if you went into 2023 waiting on closers thinking I'll get them in FAB, that, like, maybe you got Tanner Scott, maybe you picked up Kyle Finnegan at the right time, like maybe you got Andres Munoz in the second half, but like, it was really hard. There was not much. We talked about that FAB like every week pretty much during the season. It's just like the story of FAB in 2023 was all the starting pitcher call-ups and the rookies and that sort of thing. There were very few weeks. I can really can't think of any where there was like a closer to go get. And to me, that was the biggest thing with the position in last year. And if it's like that again in 2024, again, not saying it will be, but if it is, you better draft your saves because they're not there.
Yeah. Makes it pretty difficult. The next guy, Colin Pache, finished 18th in the position with an ADP of 725. He had one save, Ryan. Can you enlighten me on what happened with the rest of him? I know the answer. I'm just asking. Did
they all go to Mr. Fairbanks?
No, Pache had 12 wins. That's how he finished 18th in the position.
I see. Yeah, 12 wins and a 223 ERA. Holy hell. Yeah, so that's just like luck. He shows up on our list, but that's not good.
Yeah. That's pretty, pretty interesting there. So the other one's Kevin Ginkle finished 19th. He had his handful of saves there as well before Paul Sewald. So we'll kind of go with that one as well. A couple honorable mentions I'll throw out there, just kind of looking at the Razzball player rating real quick, just because you mentioned Adbert Alzolay earlier. He is a guy that probably wasn't drafted. Him and Tanner Scott were like the two dudes that you could add off the deal. So Alzolay would be a guy I'd throw out there. He finished 26th. I don't know which Razzball player rater you're looking at because there's a million of them to pick from. So you got that. There's the AJ Pucks of the world. There's a bunch of other ones. But Yeah, those would be the main dudes for sure. Like, the, I just want to give a shout out because since you made fun of me for having the men, I wanted to give him a little run out there as
well. You're just trying to talk yourself into a good pick.
Oh, he's a great pick. Don't you worry. So when you're looking, well, sorry, did you have anything to say on anybody else?
I mean, no, just finish whatever. What did you say on the Play Raider 23rd?
26th on the one I was looking at is standard 12 teams. I don't know which one you use. So
I probably use the same one. I just do Razzball Player Raider. I think it's 12 teams. Yeah. The thing with Alzolay was it was those 18 saves in the second half. Like that helped. So I should have looped Alzolay into my little speech earlier for sure.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Because like Puck was there, then Puck blew up at the end. Brash even made the list. There's a few other guys here, but aren't really worth discussing. That we hit on the important ones. That's all I know. Because otherwise, there's a lot of guys that picked up wins, not saves per se, on this scenario that kind of goes out the window there. So, anything else on this top 30 Bloom board you have here besides it was a pretty safe, not the right word, but steady save season, I guess. I don't know what the right word is.
Yeah, it was like the most boring save fab season ever. I don't know if that's true or not, but it felt like it. Like, I want to have two closers in my first 12 rounds in 2024, especially in draft and holds. Maybe fab leagues, I loosen that a little bit. But, like, if 2024 was anything like it was last year, like, it's just going to be so hard to get saves late in DCs or on fab. So, you better get them. That's my big takeaway.
Yep. I don't blame you one bit there. So, let's do a couple listener questions before we head on out and have our fun here. But we got at futures_bet says, who gets the majority of the saves for my Phillies this year? Please say it's Josh Hader. Hader could be a dude, but they have so many options back there already. You know, they got Alvarado, Hoffman, Dominguez, Kirkling. I just don't see them paying for Hader.
And probably not re-signing Kimbrel the way that ended. Like, he was kind of the scapegoat in the postseason. I don't know.
I'd say Alvarado.
Pick one. My guess would be Alvarado, but like maybe Sir Anthony, but Sir Anthony was so bad we glossed over him in our thing. Like he was awful.
I think if we pick a righty, it's Kirkring for me, the way they used him in the postseason late in games.
Alvarado was the guy
before he got hurt.
Until he got hurt. Like he was the guy in Philly. So
that's why I pick him.
Yeah.
Wake Up asks, Bautista, Doval, Bednar. Looks like three reasons not to draft a closer earlier. But you got to draft him earlier this year. But he's right.
But they were, I mean, Bautista finished first, Bednar fifth.
But I mean, you have to pay for him this year. He's using that argument for last year. I guess you got to figure out who do I want to take later this year and see how it works. He's not wrong. I see what he's saying 100%. But it's if you missed and took the guy next to him theory, like we talk about sometimes.
Yeah.
Then it backfires on you tremendously. Like,
I mean, Bednar, it is interesting. Holmes, like,
instead of Bednar, you're not happy.
Yeah, or Helsley instead of
Bautista. Stop Barlow instead of Alexis Diaz.
Helsley went two picks before Bautista, but that's a little skewed because remember Bautista had the January like.
Well, I took advantage of it, and if he was my reliever too in some drafts because people were letting him fall. It was glorious.
Risky though. Good on you. It worked.
Yep. As a reliever two, I'll take the risk. Let's put it that way. Reliever one, probably not. Reliever two, yes.
Four of the top five relievers finished between 8th and 16th is when they were drafted. So, yeah, I don't know.
And the last question we have here is from Jeff Biddle or Biddle. Sorry, I'm thinking Biddle. Will Leclerc be the closer in 2024 or do the Rangers try to upgrade? I think they're kind of set where they are, weirdly enough. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, both. Like, if the season started today, Leclerc, I think, is the guy. But I can definitely see Texas getting...
They could go after Hader.
They could go, yeah, exactly, Hader or Kimbrel. I mean, they have shown they will spend to win, and it worked for them, and that's good. So I could totally see them doing that.
They need a lefty back there. So Hader actually checks out for that one. That'd be something to monitor sure.
Yeah,
they need a lefty back there. So maybe it's Josh Hader, but don't be surprised if it's Leclerc. And if it is, buckle up, because I'm like Ryan. It's like it was good. It was fun, but I just don't believe it's a full-time thing for Leclerc and the consistency factor. But I've been wrong before.
It never has been throughout his career, but exactly. It's first time for everything.
But all right, Ryan, There we go. I said, we get these guys in and out. We're like a little earlier than usual. Not much. We still made it an hour, but a little earlier than usual. Wrapping up the positions, all of them reviewed and checked off. We got a Gladiator, live Gladiator draft on Thursday night. Come join the YouTube chat up in there. Then we got a couple HQ episodes next week. Then we got the holiday coming up. So final thoughts, Mr. Bloomfield.
This was really helpful for me, and just hearing some of the feedback, listeners as well, and the review concept. I think it's good to it's so, you know, you want to jump into next year, and we're drafting for next year, but it's really good to take stock of not only what happened to your teams last year, that I think that much is obvious, but to look back at some of the trends and try and decipher, like, yes, what happened last year, and then whether you think that will continue or not for 2024. So good series, man.
Always
stoked for Gladiator. I think the next episode's going to be very electric.
Yes.
I think we're going to have some shit talking in the chat. I think we'll probably have the board up, and we'll just be going at it. And then, holiday coming up, but that's still a few weeks. I'll probably start previews right when we get back from
January,
early January. We're here, man.
We'll have some fun. It's go time. Have fun. Fun is almost over, kids. It's time to get back to work. So
that's right.
Enjoy yourselves. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. And until next time, this was Bubba the Bloom, episode 88. Catch y'all later. Thank you.